You are listening to episode 134 of the Furlough Bros Tech Podcast, rumors, speculation, and predicting the future.
Welcome to episode 134 of the Furlough Bros Tech Podcast. Today is April 20th, 2014. I'm Matthew Dean Furlough, and this is my excellent brother, James Furlough.
Oh, man, what an awesome pun.
I know. I had so many choices to go with for today's date, and so I decided to at least grab two of them. I kind of wanted to work in something about transcendence, since it's a movie about AI and came out this week, but nobody likes it, so I decided not to.
It's probably a good move. You're a little quiet. Is it possible to move you closer to your mic or something?
Yes.
That's a lot better. I don't know if that's okay. Sustainable, but
it's probably not. Let me do this. How about this? How am I sounding now?
That's better. Just talk louder. That always solves the problem.
Yeah. So anyways.
Happy Easters.
Yeah, man.
You have fun with family?
Yeah, it was cool. It was very cool. It was we do the go all go to grandma's house thing and hang out and chat and talk and catch up, and we're currently working on a new business venture that is brilliant. It's absolutely brilliant. I'll have to tell you about it after the show.
But why don't you just tell everybody now? I don't understand.
Yeah, well, okay, because you know what? Honestly, it's not really repeatable unless you're around here, but it has to do with peanut butter and making it, which is exciting considering the fact that I don't like peanut butter. But
making peanut butter. You want to know where I get my peanut butter from?
Yes, I do.
Winco.
Yeah.
They got the machines where they just got the nuts on top and it grinds them live, and you just follow it in the cup like soft serve, and it's actually warm from the grinding process when you're done. Oh, it's so good. Whoa.
And that's your peanut butter? Fresh peanut butter?
Mm-hmm.
Peanutted brother butter.
It's
nice.
Just peanuts, yeah.
Yeah. We're pretty stoked about on it. We got some ideas. Some things are moving and shaking. But That was the topic of... I've talked a lot about peanut butter in the last 24, 48 hours. It's kind of weird all of a sudden. It's like taking over my life.
I know, it happens.
But, yeah. It's one of those things where I don't really mind saying, because unless you have our recipe, it doesn't matter.
True.
And that is secret. Proprietary. But I do feel like the peanut butter marker is ripe for disruption. And we're just the force to pivot and bring our innovation to that particular field.
Okay. So that's good.
Yeah, I'm pretty excited. That has nothing to do with anything.
Nope.
He said, this is how I while away my hours.
You're still young. It's okay.
I know. How about you? Did you do anything with people? I was dismissive, but... You're eating. For those of you that are listening to this show,
you timed it really poorly there. I was like, oh, you asked me a question. I was expecting you to do the intro. It's like,
man. Got you. Never
mind.
Okay.
No. We just stayed home. Well, we went to a sunrise service, and then with the high school youth group, and then went to church again for the regular thing, which was pretty fun. They had balloons, and we like bounced them around during the first song, which was cool.
How'd you even get a bunch of high schoolers to wake up at 6?
Oh, that's crazy, huh?
We had like
50 people out there. It was,
I am impressed.
Incredible.
That is actually quite astounding.
Actually, we didn't have enough sheets of paper because we weren't expecting that many, and then we had snacks when we got back, and we didn't have enough of those either because we weren't expecting that many.
See, that's where it gets really horrifying. Like, seriously, all I wanted was some stupid snacks. That's how you. Yeah. That's how you talked me into
a
this.
A quarter of a muffin, and you couldn't even deliver.
The deal. Yeah, what the heck?
It's all right. I ended up going to Winco and getting two donuts, so take that!
Perfect. Cool. Well, although we probably could John about Easter and celebrations all day long. That's not actually why we're here. We are here this week, like we are every week, to talk about technology and the continuing corporate opera of, or, and by that we mean the soap opera of corporations dealing back and forth, the people working for them, their marketing campaigns, and of course the technology they're developing. But before we get into the heart of the show, James has got a disclosure he wants to throw our way. Let us know some factorinos before we discuss things.
I work for HP, but I do not represent HP or any of HP's opinions.
Nice. Cool. If you want to follow us throughout the week, we got all sorts of cool stuff that you can tack us down on and track us, see pictures and stuff. I'm all up in the Instagram right now. That's my big thing. I've been kind of weak on the Twitter, but the but definitely been Instagramming. And my Instagram handle, if you want to check that out, is at Matt... Or no, it's Next Week in 4. My Twitter is at Matthew D. Furlow.
I really don't seem to matter much because I haven't posted anything in, like, the last week. That's not true. I did a picture for, like, the first time last night or this morning or something.
That's exciting. I've been busy. What was the debut picture of?
Sunrise. Oh, the trees. Nice. So that's all I had. But if you're interested in following an account that's not very active right now, just James Furlow. James Furlow everywhere.
JamesFurlow.com, James Furlow on Twitter, James Furlow on Instagram.
Yep.
Okay. You like to keep it
Pinterest,
simple?
Facebook, everything.
I like to make sure it sticks with you by making it difficult. That's not true. It's a bad strategy. If you do want to find out more about both of us, though, and find out all sorts of cool things, like all the articles that we talk about, any videos or audio that we play, the link to the YouTube, if you're listening to the podcast, the link to the podcast, if you're listening through YouTube. All of that is at furloughbros.com. That is the center of our intergalactic universe, from which you can find all that stuff. We also have show cuts if you want a little bite-sized version of the show, or we got the full-length show, one giant two-hour chunk of interesting meat to chew on. It's good stuff. Check it out. But how we roll.
Cool.
Coo-coo-ca-choo. So,
let's talk about making gobs of money, huh?
Okay. So this is interesting. How does this work? Okay, so Nest is a company that makes the automated thermostats. Yeah, we know how that works in principle. You go, you replace your thermostat with their thermostat. Yep. It's got the little dial thing, very well built. Works over Wi-Fi, so you can like program your phone to like communicate with it and run different stuff. And then they're doing some good business. They also built their little fire alarm things that have subsequently been aren't being sold currently, I don't believe, as they're pushing out updates to try to fix them from turning off too easily. But they obviously they were bought by Google a couple months back, yeah. And so you know, pretty good business market. They're like they're selling them for like $100 or whatever. And where's the 200 bones?
Might be like 150 or something. The average.
Yeah. So Nest thermostat. Let's check it out. Let's get some numbers going up in here because this is interesting. I want to buy one. We're gonna go to the store. What? What is this? This is stupid. Don't be stupid, Nest. It's $250.
Well, but there you go.
But there's free shipping on orders of $249 or more. So
what?
That's nice.
That's hilarious.
Yeah.
Well, I wonder what there must be something about shipping laws where you have to set it on a dollar amount as opposed to saying this product is free. You know
what
maybe I mean?
There's other peripheral stuff that you can buy, and they don't want.
Well, I know, and just say that's not free. But if you bundle it with this, then it will be free. You know what I mean? It's just weird. I don't know. It's either the way the databases are set up or the laws are set up on what you can and cannot offer for free shipping that they put a dollar amount to it. I don't know. It's just weird. That's all I'm saying.
Yeah. It is weird. So this is the thing, though. Nest has kind of figured out another data stream or another financial revenue stream. That's the word I was looking for. Based on their Nest thermostat technology. And I want to hear what your thoughts are. What, when you hear that, what's your initial guess? Unless you've already read the article, then I'll just tell you.
Which I haven't. They're sending... Well, I mean, there's a ton of data. There's behavior. What are people setting it as? And that's... You know, you can aggregate that. There's just heating temperature. There's probably some sort of calculation you can do in terms of how much money people are spending to heat and cool their homes. You can compare yourself to other homes. You know, on average, homes are this degree at this time of day.
I'm going to make it more complicated.
Talk
for
about
you.
how efficient different systems are. You know, so whoever the furnace sellers are may be interested in their particular unit's efficiency relative to others.
I'm going to make it more difficult for you. They've said they're not going to sell anybody's data. So,
what did you say? Okay, so what am I guessing on again then?
How are they making money? They got another revenue stream, and they say they're not selling people's data. Even that kind of, you know, innocuous, like, you know, efficiency data and stuff like that.
Okay, perhaps, I don't know why you would sell this, but your algorithm on how you calculate something...
Okay, so I'll give you a hint.
I got one more. Okay. Now that's just a different way of doing the same thing, where they could team up with utility companies and have the utility companies buy and install them for them. But that's the same revenue stream. It's just a different customer.
So this is the deal. This is kind of exciting. It is the utilities that are going to be paying them buku bucks on a recurring basis.
Okay.
So this is the deal. It's actually kind of brilliant. Nest is the Nest servers, and technically probably the Google servers at this point, are constantly in communication with the Nest thermostats, right? So they know when the Nest thermostats are turning on and turning off. Well, the Nest has gone to the power companies and have cut them a deal, and they said, we'll do something for you if you pay us for what we're doing. What they're saying is, what we can do is we can just turn on all the thermostats at the same time, or we can get a little funky with how they all work. And so one of the principles of how a thermostat works, I don't know if, you know, they're basically on-off switches, right? If it's too cold, right, like if you're trying to heat the room, for example, let's say cool, because AC tends to draw more power. So, air conditioning. So you're going to run the AC, and, you know, it's your temperature set at 69 degrees. It's 75 out. AC is going to turn on. One constant is just going to be running. Temperature in the house is going to come down. As soon as it gets to like 68 or 67, it's going to turn off. Temperature is going to start to rise again because now the AC is off. As soon as it gets to like 70, 71, it's going to turn on again, and it's going to just bounce between that. And the goal is to try to get it as tightly as possible on that thing, because where it's just kind of a wave along that. It's a basic control loop, a classic one. So the thing is that Nest has gone to the power utilities and said, look, we can just have these things all do the normal thing that they're doing and kind of run on their own autonomously. Or we can figure out where these all are on your network, on your infrastructure, and we can time it so that they're never all firing at the same time. We can meter them all since they're all going on and off, so that instead of just being within a band, they're also going to pay attention to what the other ones are doing in the network.
Interesting.
And so effectively, yeah. So and what's so brilliant about this is they're not doing it for free. they're pulling a Joker. You know, if you're good at something, don't do it for free. So it's just a really, really clever, like, And it's something that the utility companies love because to them, load on, especially like on hot days, you know, most of the cost of their infrastructure is relatively, you know, there's an operating cost, and that's paid through most of your utilities. It's the it's your capital expenses when you have to build a new power plant because peak usage is too high, and that's incredibly expensive and bad for the power companies. I don't like that, especially because it's only peak usage that they need to be able to maintain. And basically, Nest has come to them and said, we are now controlling the devices that generate your peak usage, and we're controlling when they use them. And as a result, we can actually balance your networks in a way, or your infrastructure in a way that nobody else can, and actually lower the peak usage right at the, you know, worst time possible. And the utility companies are going to pay out the nose for it.
They'll save money still, so it's worth it to them.
Exactly. This is the best part. So it costs 250 bones for a Nest thermostat, but they're saying that some utility partners are willing to spend spend $30 to $50 per year per thermostat to be able to turn the air conditioners up when it's that all stuff done for them. So this could be like seriously as much as $50 per thermostat to recurring year over year.
Wow.
Yeah. Yeah. And you sit there and you go, I wonder why Google bought Nest. I mean, it's not necessarily going to be as lucrative as as Google search, but it ain't bad to start with, you know, kind of pad the, as right now they're saying, what was the figure? Talking about hundreds of, or tens of millions, or even hundreds of millions of dollars per year. So, you know, pretty good money for, something that you already sold and takes a server, you know, 37 seconds to figure out how to do. So, Not a bad place to have maneuvered.
Well, you know, they're going to have engineers working on algorithms and stuff and optimizing them and
algorithms. But yeah, very cool. I love that kind of stuff. Oh man,
that's smart.
I don't know.
Yeah, I guess you never like. Every time we talk about the connected home, we kind of treat it as a silo. It's connected to you and maybe your family. We don't tend to think in the terms of, oh yeah, and it's connected to all the other homes.
Right.
You
know? Right.
And that's all of a sudden where you go, whoa, this has potential to be kind of big. Not just from a revenue standpoint for Nest, but just in the connected home space, you know?
I know. If you're concerned about, you know, they've always argued that the Nest is good for, you know, the environment because it minimizes the amount of power consumption that you're, you know, using. But this is one more strategy that's good for the environment. It's good for the world where they're, you know, reducing the amount of, you know, stuff, raw inputs that are required and the amount of, you know, power plants that we have to build and stuff. So, yeah, they get to feel good about doing something good for the world while making some pretty good coin along the path. So very cool. It'll be interesting to see. I'm sure that's not a sustainable amount of money. I think over the if Nest becomes, you know, a very big player and they're kind of, they manage the grids, it'll be interesting to see what kind of deals are worked out over time with the big boys at the power companies, especially since so often they're, you know, protected monopolies through the government. So, and you know that.
Yeah. Interesting. Interesting. Yeah. I like it. Okay, I'm showing you a picture on my screen. Can you see?
Oh, man. Let me see. It looks like a fish.
Looks like a fish. That's right. This was an image captured by one of Apple's satellites, or a satellite contracted by Apple for their Apple Maps system. This is a picture of what looks to be a fish caught by a satellite. Okay, so remember, like, things cannot be small to be caught by a satellite.
No.
In the Strait of Locke.
Really?
Really.
So what you're trying to say is that it is potentially a Loch Ness fish?
Yes, I am.
A rather big Loch Ness fish?
I'm a believer. Here, let me show. It looks like a Starship Enterprise with two fins coming out, for those of you who can't see. Slightly underneath the surface. Oh, man, I fed my dog some carrots, and now he's coming to get the rest of them. I don't know. Here we go. Here's one where you can see it kind of zoomed out a little bit. The red circle shows where it is relative to the coast. But here you go, buddy. Have one more carrot. That's all I have. Yeah, just kind of fun. And it's relevant because it was on Apple Maps. So, but it is fun where it's like, you know, technologies either, you know, they help to prove or disprove certain, I don't know, legends, I suppose.
Let's see.
That
people
have.
Thing with that is that it's, I mean, you know, I hate to be all empirical about this, but there's almost certainly not a Loch Ness monster.
What? Proof! I just showed you a picture.
Yeah, well, I got bad news, James.
The other prevailing theory is that it's just some currents.
Yeah, that's seems more likely than a.
Okay, okay,
beast.
All right, smart
you know
guy.
What about this picture?
What about
this
picture right here? This picture right here. Boom. It's hard to deny that.
It is hard to deny that, except
it's like a dinosaur in the middle of the water. Sorry, what?
Yeah. I was going to say, you know what my problem with these sorts of stories?
It was taken by Dr., mind you, he is a doctor, Kenneth Wilson, in 1934. Which, by the way, no, wait, I'm not going to say that on the web, but I have something relevant to that
now
date.
Now I'm curious.
That I'll tell you later. I am not putting that one out on the web.
Okay.
Because it's personal identifiable information. But I like to tell people,
to the show notes. Loch Ness personal. Okay, I got this. Right, because I don't want to forget now that I'm curious. So this is the deal. This is my problem with this sort of stuff all the time. This is really common, is when people try to like debunk the Loch Ness monster. I personally think it's a ridiculous idea, but one of the things that always like happens is there's like. Somebody will say, look, I caught a picture of this, or I found some shred of evidence. And then people will start to build up what they think it is. It's like, it's a prehistoric creature who swims in the oceans and, you know, or
sounds
swims
right
in the Loch Ness and has been living there for like 10,000 years. And then people come along and debunk that particular myth. And you're like, okay, now I get what you're saying where they're like, it's definitely not a prehistoric fish. That doesn't make any sense because prehistoric fish wouldn't have survived that long. And you're like, there's still a wacky picture there. Can we like address the fact that there's a wacky, okay, one crackpot's explanation doesn't explain it, but that wasn't the generally held, just because you debunked that guy's theory doesn't mean that you've debunked the fact that there's a picture of
maybe,
a monster
maybe,
in the lake.
Maybe Apple gave us an Easter egg in Maps.
I like it. I don't know. It's just it's always been my it's always been something that's just driven me nuts. Like in all that totally couldn't happen that way because of this small detail to this person who doesn't have any ideas what they're talking about story. What the heck? It's like I don't know. Do you ever watch those watch the History Channel or the Discovery Channel where they do like
that would require
alien
me to have a television.
Shows? Yeah,
used to, I guess, when I was a kid.
Yeah, if you haven't watched those channels lately, like in the last like 5 years, you're missing out on a cultural revolution. That's what you're missing out on, James.
I heard
really
the Discovery Channel's pretty good now.
You what?
I hear the Discovery Channel's pretty good now.
You know, it's funny.
It's more entertaining than it used to be. That's what I meant to say. Like, their subscriber numbers have significantly increased.
Well, yeah, that's because it's just tripe. Which, oddly enough, I like tripe in my soups. But in this case, it is disgusting gross stuff that's just barely nutritional and left over that nobody else will eat. That's
Thank
terrible.
You for defining that.
Duck Dynasty. No, I guess Duck Dynasty is History Channel. Have you ever seen Duck Dynasty?
Nope.
You're missing out on a cultural revolution, man.
It sounds like I'm not.
You're not. Well, it's interesting from an anthropological perspective. That's about the extent of the interest that I can garner up for. And I'm not saying it's not entertaining, because it is. That's the problem. In case any of our listeners like that stuff, I'm not saying that what you like is not entertaining at all. It's just not necessarily historical. Anyways, so do you want to do yours first? You want me to do mine first?
Yeah, I don't know. I'll do mine first.
Okay.
Because it's kind of small news. Just redirect already. That's kind of a combination of big news, I guess, or a big thought. So, Dropbox has bought another company.
Yes.
Their company name is Loom. L-O-O-M. They are a photo sharing app company. And if you've been paying attention at all to the news, recently Dropbox announced a new... In addition to they acquired another company, I don't remember which one. But they also have announced Carousel. At the same time that they announced Mailbox for Mac and Android. And Carousel is a way to view and manage your photos and videos that you have stored on Dropbox.
Okay.
And so Loom has been doing something very similar and is now owned by Dropbox, right? And you're kind of like, all right, good job. One of the investors, he's pretty funny. I like it because it's pretty straightforward. He says, it always reads like garbage when an investor says, he doesn't say garbage, says that a deal is a great fit, but I'm going to say it anyways. From their shared Y Combinator DNA to a shared product vision with the just-launched Carousel, Dropbox and Loom seem perfectly aligned. It's always a bit bittersweet to see a startup sell before filling their original vision they pitched, but in this case, Dropbox really will help them achieve that vision so much faster. And now for perhaps the strained analogy. The ultimate goal is to reach a planet. You set out to build a spacecraft to do so. And then you see an already assembled rocket ship speeding by en route to the exact same planet. Sometimes it's folly not to hitch a ride, especially when you carry some fuel to propel that rocket ship even faster. That's Loom plus Dropbox. And then it goes on. So I looked into it, and it is... Carousel and now parts of Loom will be a way for you to manage your photos that are on Dropbox. Just out of curiosity, do you store photos on Dropbox?
I never turned off the photo share, the automatic photo
Me
upload
neither.
Thing for my iPhone. So yes, I do, and in mass, because every time I open it up, it uploads like
a ton.
You know, a bazillion
I
photos.
Did it. They had a promotion for a while, and it's probably still going, where if you enabled the auto-upload, at least on my Mac, I turned it off on my phone. But if it did it on my Mac, so anytime I sync my phone, it, like, you know, bloop, uploads everything. That storage was considered, like, free, you know? And,
right.
And so it would bump your box size, which I'm up to, if I don't mind sharing. 12.5 gigabytes,
and it like permanently bumped it. Yeah,
yeah, exactly. So I, you know, I did the math, and I uploaded all my photos until I hit the max, and then I deleted all of them, and it went sweet.
Oh, geez.
I know. Well, whatever. I mean, and I'm sure that they knew and had done some math that there were people like me who were going to do that, and they took the risk that maybe I would fall in love with it and never go back. And I didn't, because I have iPhoto and. you know, that's the way it was.
Well, see, my question is why not use both? That's kind of where I'm at. I use iPhoto, and it stores everything locally on my devices and kind of shares them over the internet. But Dropbox has a, you know, I can get to Dropbox anywhere in the world.
So here's my thought on this. And part of it is I'm using 67.8% of my space right now with other stuff.
Yeah.
It's not an unlimited amount of space, which I get that I could buy a Dropbox Pro account and I'd get 100 gigabytes, and that would probably be enough for the amount of photos that I have. Because I am running into a legitimate problem here, and I don't know what to do about it, which is, where do I store my photos? For example, I feel like the music and movie issue has been solved, right? At least for music, on the Apple solution, right, there's iTunes in the cloud, and so, you know, whatever it's called, which I think you have. So when you buy a song, do you still download it onto your computer?
Yeah, because I have it set so it automatically downloads all my songs when I buy them, so it just shows up everywhere. But I don't download, if for some reason the song didn't get downloaded, like because I switched computers or switched phones or something, which I've done quite a few times, I generally don't download it. My phone, I got a bunch of playlists, and I download all those songs. But other than that, yeah, I just play them, stream them.
Me too.
Download them when I need them.
Okay, on your phone, but you have them on your computer. Is that what I heard you say?
Yeah, my computer, it just is. I stream everything.
So, and that's, so I don't have iTunes in the cloud for music, but I do buy or rent movies through iTunes, and on those I'll buy them and I'll say, oh, don't download, please don't, and then I'll just, when I'm ready to watch it, I'll just stream it, right? And same thing is on my phone. If I want to watch it, I'll probably download it ahead of time, you know, just like, yeah, download this thing, that way if I'm traveling I have it, and then when I'm done I delete it, and I don't care that I don't have the movie physically with me at this time, right? And that's okay. And that's the idea of iTunes Music, too, or iTunes in the Cloud, or whatever it's called. You know, it's, if you don't have any music on your computer, that's fine. And they'll actually figure out which ones you listen to the most and have those ones downloaded, and otherwise it'll just stream it if you surprise them. And that's cool. Google has this idea of your music locker in the cloud, which honestly scares me a little bit because it's Google. But don't get me wrong, I love Google. I really love a lot of the stuff that they're doing. I'm a little less like, oh yeah, Google's got me, no big deal. I know that if they ever shut anything down, they would give us an out before that happened.
But still,
you know, yeah, exactly. And there is this question, at least with them, of if I don't have an internet connection, say I'm flying in an airplane, I have no music.
Right.
And, you know, unless I'm willing to do their go Wi-Fi thing that they charge you $50 for to, you know, look at your email. That's not that expensive. Yeah. But it's cost prohibitive, at least right now. So anyways, there are solutions for those, and so it's fine. But with your photos, I feel like there are a lot less choices with those. And so I'm like, okay, fine. I put it on Dropbox. It's still on my hard drive. It's still taking up space. It's still slowly but surely growing. And I know Google's got their... you can put them in the drive now or something. Or Google Plus. And, you know, you can edit and view and share and do all sorts of cool stuff there, which is genuinely interesting, except for the fact that am I just going to trust that if I have it on a server, it's all going to be fine? And if I did want a local version, how do I deal with that? You know, the nice part about it, at least with that Apple's got right now, and maybe this is worth looking into with Android, and I wish we had an Android expert on so I could get my question answered. You know, is when I take a photo on Google, with my iPhone, it does sync it to iCloud. And so at least temporarily, I've got a backup of it, and I don't care if I lose my phone because it's all good. And, you know, and then when I get home, it's on my computer. But, and I've got my computer backed up using carbonite. So I'm not at. So I'm, this conversation isn't necessarily about, oh, it's not backed up. What if I, you know, have a fire and I lose everything or my computer crashes? I don't care about that. I'm set there. You know, that would be lame, right. But it's not the end of the world. But I also feel like there's another option. Like on my note-taking apps, they're all synced to the cloud. For my to-do list, synced to the cloud. Email, calendar, contacts, all of that, which is all relatively low data, is all synced to the cloud, but is also, you know, on my local machines. And so, you know, it all works fast. And I think the context is a great one, because I do have somewhere I'm like, these are my contacts, according to Google Contacts, and so that is on every single machine. But then there are some that are not, and I just have them in the Google Contacts space. It's in the web, and I would have to have an internet access if I wanted to get a hold of them. You know, so it has that, so it's nice. So I feel like I've really built this up, and I'm going to be quiet and let you chat for a little while, because I don't think there's a great solution other than I'm identifying an opportunity. What do we do with all these photos that we're generating now? Because we have all these phones with us that are creating high-quality, data-dense photos.
So my strategy is this. I am of the belief that storage space is cheap. And I think it's one of those things where, you know, there are areas where I'm an abnormal user. Data usage, I'm an abnormal user, and it's rough because I'm constantly outpacing what they want to give me, which is why I'm going to change to a company this week that will not be like that.
I will miss you, but also not miss getting the emails warning me that you're going over your data limit.
You know, I'm looking forward to that, but my photo generating habits don't outpace storage that I'm able to have.
That right now? Like, what's your setup system? Where are you at for that?
So this is what I do. I let everything just kind of go to Dropbox that Dropbox wants. Dropbox wants to grab it from me, I let them take it. I have all of my photos stored on my computer. Through iPhoto. I've got everything on my phone and kind of fingers crossed between the two of them. everything that needs to, you know, they won't both explode at the same time.
And how big is your phone again? You got the 64 gig?
Yeah, I got the 64 gig, which is nice because I can do that. Yeah.
Especially since you're doing the iTunes Match thing, you don't have to have all of your songs on your phone or your movies or whatever.
Right.
So okay.
Right,
okay.
Exactly, and you know, so it's I've got these downloaded backups of it, and so I've kind of with my photos, it's one of those things where I don't know why, like, well, I do know why. Anything that I've created, I'm a little more protective, and I tend to set up a couple of different, I leverage as many different methods of saving it as possible. Like my books, I've got like 7 different copies on different services and stuff, because I want half of the world to be able to collapse and not lose that.
Fair.
If I may
just dig into you a little bit, if you published one of them, you would have thousands of copies all over the world.
I know. Dude, I'm working on it, okay?
I'm saving
up my pennies right now.
I'm your older brother. Sometimes I just got to get that family dig in, because it is Easter Sunday after all.
I know. I appreciate that. You're so kind. On this Resurrection Sunday. That's it. We were throwing that around all morning long anytime anybody was mean to anybody. And yes, on Resurrection Sunday.
For the record, I did look up where the Easter Bunny came from, and because I was like, how did that get involved? But that's a different story. It's interesting. Look it up.
How did it get involved?
Well, you know, it's based on another pagan holiday that had to do with spring, and representation of spring where it was the rabbit, I guess.
Did they say the fertile rabbit in the
The
in
fertile
spring?
Rabbit. Yep. And yeah, so that was where it came from. And, not surprisingly, when Christians came and were trying to proclaim the gospel, they wanted to make it relevant to those pagan worshipers. And it was around the same time that Christians celebrated resurrection. So they were like, oh yeah, just use this existing holiday to tack on. Which missionaries are still using to this day. I remember talking with one where they're in India and they talk about people smashing the coconut, and they talk about how the outside of it is all, you know, dirty and gross, and then when it's smashed on the inside, it's all white and clean. And so they're like, so when you smash a coconut, it represents Christ breaking for you and cleaning and purifying. So what you're like,
at least they try to.
That's really smart. Right, and you connect with them in their context and what makes sense to them, and attribute a new meaning to it, and that was what happened to us a long time ago. Yeah.
I was going to say, at least they're actually trying to give it a new context, because from what I understand, some of the missionaries, like back in the day when they were dealing with the pagans, they'd go up and they'd be like, hey, by the way, that whole like, you know, tree Yule log tree thing that you do, that's a Christian thing now. So every time you do that, now you're celebrating Christmas. Conversion done, baby.
Boom. Or how about my favorite two are the Californian missionaries. We're like, and now you will speak English. You will live in square houses, and you will dress in Western clothes. You're welcome.
Yeah, exactly.
And now you will get sick like we do.
Missionaries weren't always perfect.
You know, well, that's what happens. They're human.
Yeah.
Anyways, that's where it came from.
Yeah, that's. what were we talking about? My book, my public. Yeah,
yes.
So
backing up.
I guess. Yeah, bringing it all around. I guess what my point is, it's at this point, there's no good solution, and it's something that I think everybody wants to be your. I think your Googles, your Facebooks, those companies have this real problem where they, on one hand, they desperately want to be that because it's worth so much money to them in their, you know, view. But we all look at them and go, yeah, but what if you're MySpace? And that is, you know, that's a major that's something that, yeah. I feel like, you know, how am I going to say this? Most of us create things for work and in our family life and stuff. You know, we create. Yeah. We're making programs, or we're making, you know, documents, or we're making whatever. Like, you know, especially if you're listening to this podcast, chances are you're in the business of creating. You may not think that it's very creative, or, you know, and if you've got like a lame job, you might not think it's very, you know, exciting, but chances are you're generating something. And if you think about it, you don't store that something on just Google or just Facebook. What we store on Google and Apple servers and Facebook servers and all these servers are content, something that somebody else has created that we can download again and again and again. And for whatever reason, we're willing to trust companies with that. You know, we're willing to trust Netflix that they'll still have, you know, all the episodes of Breaking Bad when I want it. And we're willing to make that exception. And more, it's to the point where Apple is going to completely undercut the iTunes model, because people don't buy music anymore. I'm in an anachronism, anachronism that I still buy music, and it's largely because, you know, I want to be able to download it. And I don't want to pay $10 to Spotify. It's too expensive.
it's pretty
says
expensive.
Says the guy who buys music. What?
But do you buy $10 worth of music each month?
Probably. I try not to, but I probably do. And one of my big things is you can buy any music off of iTunes. You can't download, play any music off of Spotify. So
I don't know that.
You know,
But I thought even if you bought a song off of iTunes, then you could sync it to your Spotify library and then play it.
Yeah, you can. Like Garth Brooks, you can. But you got to buy the music. So it's one of those things where it probably makes sense to get Spotify. But this is the thing. Apple's going to have a streaming service really soon here, because they've realized it's a dead model. People aren't doing it anymore. We trust streaming services to be our for content that other people have created. But anything that we create, and, you know, if you take pictures and videos, those are like the things that we create personally at home most often. But things that we build for work, nobody stores those on public servers because it's stuff that I create. It's valuable to me, and I want to protect it. Maybe there's a copy of it on a public server. We use, like at my work, we use Dropbox for sharing stuff. But all of that gets saved to your local place, and that's the value of Dropbox, right? If Dropbox suddenly goes down, everything that got transferred is still on your hard drive. And I think that is what we want right now. Is if Google really wanted to get serious about doing photos and stuff, what they would do is they would build a dedicated, you know, they'd build an iPhoto for your photos, and it would just be like they would basically just be transferring it. You could see it anywhere. But I think that's why, you know, the biggest struggle that we've got going on here right now is Dropbox has the best product for storing your pictures, but not enough space. There's a concern that you'll run out of room. But at the same Google, who's got...
I mean, I'm still like, it still doesn't solve the problem of my hard drive filling up.
Well, I don't know what to do about that. I mean, that's...
Well, I mean, and that's problem, part of where I'm coming from.
If you're willing... I mean, say, if you're willing to trust Google, then you can trust
Google. Well, I'm not,
Facebook,
so far.
I know. I think, and that's the dilemma. I think at some point, these companies are big enough, they've been around long enough where... You can trust them to certain products are going to make sense.
I guess, but I mean, think about Google Reader, right? I mean, I will come back to that one until I die, by the way.
I know, right?
You know, because I had so much on there. I had real information content, you know, reading trends, histories, that kind of stuff. And they're just like, nope, sorry, done. Now, granted, they gave me enough time to export some of it, but... not all the information, and I just I don't know. I just sit there and I mean, all these podcasts. Now I have a copy of the original audio and I guess the edited audio, and I don't know why I keep both because I'm weird. But I've got a version of the final sitting on our server, right? Which if you're listening to it right now, and it's not the video. You are listening to the server copy of that. And then I've got one on, like I said, on my hard drive, sitting in iTunes. And then I have the original WAV file. But the video, that's all on YouTube, and I just never take it off. And, you know, it's just because it gets generated there, I keep it there. For some reason, I trust Google with that. But with photos, I don't.
We treat it. This is the thing, though. I think we treat ourselves as at this podcast as a podcast. We call it the Furlough Bros Tech Podcast, not the Furlough Bros YouTube video podcast.
True.
Thing. You know, and because of that, we've always said our primary product is a video product. When I do the podcast alone without you and you abandon me,
which I do on occasion.
I put that on the servers, and we just do an audio because I am too stupid to figure out how to link a YouTube video.
That's fine.
Wait, what?
That's fine.
Keep cutting out. Yeah.
I do?
On my end. I think you're fine since you're recording it locally, but I have to read your lips. What was I going to say? Oh, man. I totally got distracted by my own thoughts. I got it. So this is what I think we might end up doing. I think we might end up, and this is where we go. Right now we've got Dropbox, and it's a service. It's an entire framework. And basically, you get for free a little piece of server space. Or you can buy to get a big piece of server space with all that framework. I think what might make sense to solve your problem would to have like a it's a WordPress style thing where basically what you do is if you own server space, which you know, or you rent server space, which is effectively what you and I do, there could be a suite of tools that effectively turns that server space into a Dropbox. Now, if you already have a server, it's already kind of that. But it's basically what it is, but you can serve HTML from it usually. But if you were to actually just treat that server space and you were to set up, you know, tools that are very Dropbox-esque, with, you know, visualization tools and different stuff like that, so that all you do is you say it's going to cost you $10 a month to get how many ever gigs you want from whatever service you want, right? And then what you're going to do is you set up this suite of tools, and now everything's being stored on your server. And if you're using, if you have server space for websites like we do, or if you don't, you can turn these things, you can you know, section it off where a certain amount will be your shareable folder, and then everything can be stored on a server that you control. And if it goes away, it's because you stopped paying for it, and you can store locally or not if you want. And I'm of the belief, and I think Google's of this belief too, although we might have different opinions about what this actually looks like. But I think eventually everybody will have server space, remote storage. Google wants it to be Google remote storage, and so does Amazon, and so does Facebook, and so does Apple, and so does everybody else. But I think the reality of it is, chances are it's going to look something like an open folder that, you know, is very flexible, and you know, it's going to look more like an FTP client that people understand how to use, and just sort of automatically connected to your computer. When you drag and drop stuff there, it just shows up there. And if you want to, you know, go to it from a website, you type in your URL and it pops up the way it's supposed to, because there's an HTML index that will show you the information that you want, right? I think that's what ends up happening. I think that's where it ends up going, and it just becomes part of your utility bills, is that every family has a server space that's stored by some company you trust, and it might be Amazon and Facebook and Google in the future. But ultimately that's what happens. And you can serve your websites from that, and you can serve your own content from that. You can lock it down and keep it safe and keep it protected. But you don't log in through Google. It's just, I think, is what ends up having to be. You know, it's not a Google portal. It's your little thing. It's just that you're paying for. It's just that Google's, you know, does that make sense? I don't know. I feel like I'm repeating.
Yeah, yeah, I understand what you're saying. That's an interesting concept, actually.
I feel like that's something that if the
ISPs were smart, they would do.
Yeah.
And they would just embed that in your pricing contract. And then I would never leave whoever I'm with. I'm like, dude, I'm not... You know what I mean? That would be so smart on their part, where it's like, yeah, it's a little more expensive to go with whoever, but in addition to the speed boost, you get some extra storage space, and they set it up so that it is very... there's different ways to tap into it. Oh, you want a Dropbox? Like, you know, you just want a file surfer? All right, cool. Download this utility for whatever it is, and you can see it. Oh, you want to manage your photos that are on there? Cool. Here's this utility. Do it. Oh, you want to host a website? Cool. Here's this utility to help you do it.
Yeah.
You want to listen to your music? Blah, blah, blah. Whatever. That would be very interesting service, and that would be a way for them to get away from the whole dumb pipes model. And it is part of, like you said, just part of your utility offering there, where they're like... You know, like Comcast, they give you an email address, and I'm always in shock when I see one. And, you know, why stop there? Give me the email, give me the calendar, and give me the contacts, you know, give me all those productivity tools, and then give me those, like you were talking about, those content storage tools as well. That could be very interesting, actually. That's a missed opportunity on their part. Because then you'd be locked in, and you would never leave. And if you were brilliant, which I would be if I were running them, I would team up with, say, Apple or Google and be like, hey, maybe not them, but, you know, Apple maybe.
Amazon's a big dog right now in this arena, I think. The open storage, you know? Speaking of which, dude, somebody broke into my car, broke my rear window, but worse than that, they stole my Kindle Paperwhite. And I use it all the time, which... kind of actually surprised by, but still to this day, because I was so vehemently against having... Why would you want a tablet? Why would you want an e-reader if you have a tablet? Doesn't make any sense. So stupid. And then the Paperwhite came out, and I was like, I need this. I have it now. And I use it super frequently, and now I'm gonna have to go buy another one. I'm so angry, I can't even stand it. I hate criminals. Ugh. But whatever, that's besides the point. Amazon's got me. They store all my book content. But anyways.
And we're so, okay with that.
What?
It's a bigger topic, obviously, and I use that, you know, the purchase of Loom by Dropbox as a segue into it. I still genuinely feel like that story, or, you know, is not done yet. You know, or that, like, it's not solved, I guess.
No, not at all. Not at all. And I think it's a, and like I said, I think it's a much bigger issue. I think it is one of the more problematic issues, because it's a huge amount of data, everybody has it, and nobody solved it. And so it's just the photos ones really, really, really kind of keeps coming up as the one to solve, because once you can solve it, I think most people feel like the current gen, any data storage, so, you know, any content creation data storage problems are solved at that point, until the next big, you know, everybody starts recording 4K video, and then we got to figure our lives out again. I think once we all kind of come to grips with whatever solution we have, I think your, you know, chances are it gets better. But anyway, so all of our friends and family have Fitbits, or more and more and more and more. This is a terrible segue. I'm gonna break you guys' necks with this one, but it's kind of resulted in players that everybody thought would be sort of dominant, not dominating. Specifically, Nike. They are not doing as well as in the Fuel Band, or their health band thing, as people may expect. And they've made some announcements in regard to what they're, you know, what they're doing with the Fuel Band. They're firing everybody. The whole team's going away. They're also launching a Fuel Band. Big innovation here. They're launching a new product. It's a Fuel Band in the color pink, which is very exciting. The dilemma here, obviously, is that that's stupid compared to what everybody else is coming out with.
So this story is interesting for multiple reasons. The first one, which is just kind of an aside here, the news broke on Secret, which kind of makes sense, because it's not traceable, and you can get away with telling secrets. But you're like, man, that's brilliant. So I almost think there's a part of me that's like, man, I think Secret's around to stay, just for that very reason right there. I mean, there's some weird stuff on there, and I'm always like, man, I wonder who signed up. Because I saw one today, it was done by a friend, and I was like, I have a couple guesses. I wonder if I can tell who my friends are who are signed up. Can you tell that, actually? Is that possible?
I don't know.
Because it was of the type where I was like, I think I could figure this out. If I had a list of friends, because I had a hunch. But anyways. So that was an aside there.
How do you know if it was made by a friend? I can't remember.
It told me. It says it in the lower left-hand corner of the actual post. If it's just popular, it gives you a location. If it's a friend of a friend, it will tell you that. And if it's not, like in Atlanta, this person says, Target gets me. Apparently, it has wines underneath the energy drinks section. There's that. Let's see here. No notifications. Invite friends, manage account, log out, turn off nearby. Oh, yeah, I do have that on. Let's see if I go to invite friends.
We've gotten completely distracted.
Yeah. I know. Okay. So the point being that this rumor of Nike stopping production and laying off people came on Secret. So that's the first one. Which I think is interesting. The second one, like you said, is that their level of innovation seems to be around color, which is not necessarily interesting, but sad. But also interesting is one of the guys on their board, who's been on their board for, it's been like a while, right? I don't know, it's been a few years, is none other than Apple CEO Tim Cook.
Yeah. Yeah.
Who we're all pretty sure is coming out with a wearable computer. And it's, does it sound like a certain, like, Google Eric Schmidt on Apple's board situation? I don't know. I feel like I've heard this one before.
so the deal is pretty, like, transparent. And it's funny. I think we've kind of mentioned this before. I don't know if we've ever talked about it in depth. But there was this obvious dilemma of the fact that Tim Cook wears a Nike Fuel Band. And he was coming out with a Nike Fuel Band, but on steroids. And it's, I think it's a little bit opposite of what happened with Google, because Google was, they didn't tell, Apple told Google, hey, this is what we're building. Google didn't tell Apple, we're going to try to build the same thing.
Well, no, that's not true. Eric Schmidt was recusing himself anytime the board of directors were talking about the iPhone. But, so Eric, he didn't, you know, once it got far enough down the pipe, he, you know, he was no longer a part of it. And so Apple knew that they were doing something, because they had to have, right? Like, why else would Eric Schmidt be like, right. so I can't be in this part of the meeting. Don't ask me why. You know what I mean?
Right.
So they both knew. And from what I understood, the actual product managers of the Android didn't know anything about it until it came out. So, you know, and Mac That's Daily true. News loves to show the photos of the before and after to prove it. Which is fun for the Samsung cases, but
I guess my point is, if you were a Nike Fuel Band engineer and didn't see this coming, you're an idiot. Like,
true.
You like, how can you not have been following that this is what was going on? Tim Cook loves your product so much that he's going to make one that's 20 times better, and it's going to be Apple branded. Really? Now, what's interesting about it? So the question to me is this. I think Apple was pretty forthcoming with Nike.
They've been partners on a lot of stuff, like their pedometer thing that went in the shoe. I have in my soul, and not my my actual soul, like the soul of my shoe. There's this little logo that's a Nike Plus, and you can buy. It's like a little slot inside the sole, and you can buy that Nike Plus, and I didn't, which is probably the reason why they're closing down, pedometer thing, put it in my shoe, and it syncs automatically with my phone.
And that's very cool.
And it would be a pedometer on my phone. And I never bought it. Went with the Fitbit instead once that was given to me. You know, I did the $12 cheapy one until before then. So all that to say, like, Apple and Nike, they're friends. You know, I mean, above and beyond just the fact that Cook's on the board.
Yeah, and Nike Fuel Band has always had a place
of course,
when you go into
in the way that just, Apple
this,
and Google were friends,
me,
but you know.
Right. Well, this to me is the most telling nature of their relationship. When you walk into the Apple store, pretty much any Apple store, and you walk to their wearable health unit stuff, the Fitbits are up so high that somebody's got to help a tall person to reach them. The Nike or the Jawbones are right underneath that, and then the Nike Fuel Bands are right at eye level. I mean, come on. It's you know, that to me is just the most telling, you know, aspect of their relationship. And I think one of the biggest problems that, in my humble opinion, is that Nike really tried to make it a closed system. Like, they really got into their whole fuel thing. You know, we're not gonna judge it based on calories and just give you simple biometrics. We're gonna give you fuel, and which everyone's like, well, it does do pedometer stuff too. And I was like, does it sync with my Fitness Pal? No, you know, and which is disconcerting. I'll be totally honest. Because I really like the fact that, you know, this is the Google lover in me coming out, that, you know, that that Fitbit's very open with their data. We take, we do pedometer steps. We don't play any magic with the algorithms. We don't try to do anything crazy. We just give you this information. It's pretty transparent where it all comes from, and you can download it all. Just get tons of really, in, you know, all of the data. You got to pay for that service, but you can get it.
Yeah.
You can share it with different apps. There are open APIs. You can compete with your friends. They just really get like they've really gone out of their way to make it very open, which is the reason why I bought it in the first place, and I've advocated it with all my other friends. You know, it's and now it's like I feel very cool because I've got this big list of friends that all have it, and I feel like half of them bought it because I've been marching around with one for the last year and a half, which I want my money, guys. Fitbit, you guys owe me.
Yeah, dude.
Give me
word
cash.
Of mouth is not cheap.
Yeah, especially now that I wear it on my wrist, dude. I'm like, it's ridiculous. You know, it's funny. I resisted buying one that I would wear on my wrist for so long, and then I started wearing it on my wrist, and everybody was like, "Whoa, what is that? That's a Fitbit." And I'm like, "Oh, that's really cool." And all of a sudden, I realized it's like when I go out, You know, we went out to the city Friday night, yeah, and
sure.
San Francisco, and I, you know, you dress up really nice and everything, and everybody's got their like super expensive watches on, and I've got my Fitbit on. And now, granted, part of the reason is because I want credit, man. We're walking all over the city. I want those steps to count.
Oh yeah, totally.
But the really significant thing that I've noticed is that my other friends have started to wear it too. Because if you know it's a Fitband and you're out trying to flirt with girls or trying to flirt with guys or whatever, and you see somebody with a Fitbit, you know that's somebody that's health conscious. It's just it's part of an image. It's this growing image thing, which is just kind of amazing to watch it happening. You're like, this is so exciting. Like I'm watching a cultural revolution happen in its nascent state, and it's just it's happening, and it's just this super powerful thing, which makes me sit there and go, Nike, if they're getting out because they think it's a dumb product and it's not going anywhere, they are unbelievably short-sighted and stupid. And Nike's not unbelievably short-sighted and stupid. They're
typically
generally
not.
The opposite. And so to me, I think the simple, undeniable idea here is that they're in cahoots with Apple. Apple's giving them a heads up. And
that would be my guess.
The question to me is Apple going to absorb parts of, you know, the Nike technology, or is Nike going to get compliant with what Apple's doing? Who's driving the, you know, are is that whole Nike Fuel thing going to become a fundamental part of the Apple ecosystem, or is that something that Apple said, we're not going to do that because we don't think people want it, and Nike said, well, then there's no reason for us to keep doing
it. Well, see, Nike's in a tough spot, right? Because which company would you say is better at making hardware?
They're Facebook. Apple? I don't know why Facebook.
Which company would you say is better at making software?
Apple?
I mean, at what point are they going to depend on Nike?
That's a good point. Well, and not to mention the fact that Nike's whole thing was about motivating you to just do it. That was what they were building.
They sell shoes.
The technology was all right. And you know, whereas Apple's thing is about quantifying your biometrics. In a way that allows you to track your health, which is just a different thing. It's a different, you know, it's a different motive, and it's going to result in different stuff. So yeah, I guess when you put it in that frame, it becomes clearly obvious that, you know, that the whole that the whole Nike Fuel band thing and the Fuel metric is a dead end, not because it's a dead end technology, but because. So my question
I could just imagine that conversation, right, where, you know, Tim Cook is talking to whoever the Nike CEO is, and, you know, just being like, hey, we should partner on this because Apple's going to be doing something, you know, where maybe let's talk about how we can work together on this, you know, and they're like, all right, you know, Nike's like, well, we got this hardware, you know, this wristwatch, but yeah, you know, we're working on something too, we're pretty good at hardware, and we're going to get our cost down to this, and it's going to have this battery life, and it's going to do this, that, and Nike's like, oh, that sounds pretty nice, actually. Yeah, why don't you do the hardware piece? Like, okay, well, let's talk about the software. And Nike's like, well, we got these algorithms, and, you know, we've got this this suite that we've built, and you know, so we got some software, and Apple's like, yeah, we've already, you know, already integrated all that into the iPhone. You know, we've got that M chip now, which can add as a side thing. You know, plus we've got our big server, so we can store everything. Plus we've got an entire wing of developers who know how to code for both Mac and for iPhone and, you know, for iOS. Oh yeah, and we also took the step because we were interested in going beyond, where we hired all of these biometric experts as well. I don't know if we want to use your software anymore because, you know, because we've got it. So we'll just do the software piece too. Then you're like, so we'll provide the coaches from Nike, right, to motivate people. We'll put together the soundtracks. Well, you know, actually, we have these iTunes experts since we've been doing iTunes Radio, where they're actually skilled at putting together playlists for different moods and, you know, and modes. So we'll just have them do that too. You know what I mean? And you're just like, yeah. You get to the end of the conversation, and Apple goes, so we're going to destroy you.
Right.
How do you want to do this?
Right. And what the question that I have is that they're friends. They're very much friends.
Yeah.
So either they're preparing to destroy that relationship because it is the future of the technology, or they've given Nike some, they've, you know, Apple for all of their, you know, for all of their kind of, what's the word I'm looking for? How often they just go through and destroy people and crush things and just completely take over it. There are other times that they are like ridiculous about not wanting to get involved, not wanting to get on step on people's toes. It's like Square, perfect example, where they, yeah, you know, they said, hey, Square, we really like the idea of what you're doing. We really think it's great for to work with our company. We think yours is ugly, so we're going to get our chief designer to tell you how to make it look, and then we're going to let you do the rest. And Square is doing incredibly well because of, as a result, and they're basically an Apple partner. Apple, you know, Apple will steer clear of crushing competition that they could easily beat because they don't want to get involved and they don't want to take it over. Now, if it is something that they want to take over, you know, you're in for a world of hurt.
Well, and it's like, you know, Nike and Apple are fundamentally different companies, you know, whereas like, right, Google and Apple. Because I think this is the great analogy. We're slowly dancing around the same things, and we're slowly careening close to each other. And I think everyone knew it and felt it. And, you know, and then it did collide, and it collided in a huge way. And part of it, too, I think, is the way, you know, I'm going to say it. The way Google went about it was there was probably more copying than innovating at the beginning. And that infuriated, yeah, Apple to no end. And with Nike, that's obviously different, you know.
Yeah.
Nike's already come out and said, here's how we think it should be done, you know, and so it's just a little different, a different way. And I think, I don't know, I mean, Apple's not ashamed to copy, don't get me wrong. They tend to be a little more strategic or surgical about it, I guess is the right way I would,
yeah,
say. If there's a certain feature they like, they're going to take it. Yeah, I know that was a very fanboyism statement of me, but I think it's true. And I doubt, yeah, even a Google fanboy would be like, well, you know, that those Samsung products are actually different in the beginning. They're not the same, really. You know, you're not. Come on.
Yeah.
Come on. We all know. it's different,
yeah,
today.
No,
don't get me wrong. It sounds like the Samsung Galaxy S5 is not fantastic, but that's different.
Yeah, that was, jeez.
Apparently the finger scanner doesn't work so well. But for a side comment.
Yeah.
Surprise.
Yeah, you know, it's funny. I had an interesting conversation today because everybody was talking about, a bunch of our family members were talking about having to replace all of their passwords all the time. And I said something sort of flippantly that I don't really believe. That every once in a while I like to just throw a bunch of kerosene onto a conversation and see what happens. And it's funny, as soon as I said
it, because one of our aunts was probably big into it, huh? Anyways.
Well, yeah, but I had this moment where I said, you're talking about changing up all their passwords, and I said, I think it's a coordinated effort through a bunch of different tech companies and the media to get us all comfortable with the idea of biometrics. And they were like, what? And I was like,
man,
they're basically
awesome.
trying to And I say, I mean, they're fortuitous circumstances. They're not going out and making, you know, holes and getting rid of everybody's passwords and stuff. You know, they're not purposely going out there and destroying the password, but they know that it's fundamentally flawed. And so now all of a sudden in the last couple of months, as all these new biometric things are coming out that to like get you on to the idea of swiping a finger in order to to do this, like,
you are a troublemaker.
Yeah, all of that at the same time as every month some big company's going, you got to change all your passwords. We've ruined everything in your security world.
We've
the goal is so to get everybody over to, and it's like, I don't know. It's, you know, I'm not much of a. It's funny. What, and as soon as I said it, I don't think there is an intentional campaign to do that, but I do think that a lot of your early adopters and a lot of your tech companies think that that is the only solution to the password problem, is to get more and more intense biometrics involved, and or at least it's an important component of it, and they know people are very uncomfortable with it. So every time this comes up, they let it be a little bit worse. Because they want that to seem a little bit worse, and your finger scanners to send, your iris scanners, and your implanted chip, and your tattoo with a 666 on it to seem, you know, a little bit more welcoming. And which I say that because that's inevitably where everybody goes with it. But I, you know, but it's like, it's ridiculous because it's the only way that it works. It's not, you know,
it's that two-factor authentication, right? You got to, sort of physical proof and then mental proof.
Well, and it's really and truly, it's like I've heard it's actually a three-step. It's who you are, what you have, and what you know. So the device is your device. It scans you and it knows it's you, and for whatever biometric, and then you put in some sort of information. And that is as secure as anything could get. And that's what most, you know, most like high intensity security do some variation of that. But that's totally off the point of your Nike Fitbit, except for the fact that, you know, you are talking about biometric scanners that are going to be, you know, living on you semi-permanently with Bluetooth, you know, connectivity to your cell phone and to the wider internet. I don't know. I think I'm very curious to see where Nike goes from here, because they're pretty emphatic that the Nike Fuel Band idea in wearables in general is not something that the company is completely out of, but clearly the Nike Fuel Band in its current state is dead. I mean, it's just dead. They're not going to have a Nike Fuel Band 2.0. And so I am very curious to see what they think comes next. I wonder if their thing is going to be, you know, I wonder if, you know, I've talked quite a few times about the idea that I hope Apple doesn't just build the iWatch, but they also build a whole suite of communication protocols that make it very easy for somebody to build a piece of hardware and interface it with the iPhone. You know, sort of like, you know, iTunes for the, or what is it? CarPlay. Sort of like CarPlay or AirPlay, where there is a protocol that you can just call these APIs, and if you get the whole MiFi licensing thing, you could build your own watch that does what the iWatch does. It just, you know, it has its own styling. And I wonder if they're going to have early partners like Nike, and Nike's going to come out with a foot thing, or a, you know, for your shoe or headphones or something. And they're basically going to give Nike, a lot of clearance for that first round of, this is what Nike does well, so we're going to let Nike do well, and we're going to give them the inside track on working with iOS. That wouldn't surprise me at all. Of course, they just fired all their engineers, so who knows where it goes from there.
Who knows?
That's, you know. But, I don't know. More fuel on the iWatch fire. So, very exciting.
Good one.
How much time have we got? Half hour?
Yeah.
Cool. All right, good.
We've been taking our time. It is Easter Sunday, after all.
Oh, no. Well, we actually got a bunch of stories to go over.
I know. I think only one other one is mine, so I got mine out early. That's how I roll.
I say, I won't jump into yours right away then, because that was the one I was going to go enough. With next. But, boom, okay. Speaking of Apple rumors in July, so the iPhone 6, I'm emotionally preparing myself because it seems that everybody – it's one of those rumors that kind of came out and Apple never denied it, which – or they're not fighting against it, and now some of your big dog financial guys are throwing in their weight saying, yeah, we totally think this is what's going to happen.
It's a bigger screen. It would make sense. It's the phablet. Yeah. It's here.
Exactly. And what happens when you got a bigger screen? It costs more money to make, and they need their margins, so everybody's saying that there's going to be a $100 increase for the iPhone 6, which is rough. That's rough. That's emotionally hard for me to take, because that's going to solidly push my iPhone 6 64 gig iPhone into the ballpark of being $900 after taxes and fees, which is ridiculous for a device that I'm going to carry around in my pocket and probably break on a regular basis. Well, I guess that includes AppleCare Plus, because I will get AppleCare Plus because I'm going to carry it around in my pocket and probably break it on a regular basis, as I have done with the iPhone 5.
But yeah, I don't know how I feel. I'm kind of, because we're pretty certain, because like I've told you, my wife's iPhone, it's a solid half inch diameter circle in the upper right hand corner of her phone that's just black.
That's annoying.
It's slowly getting bigger and bigger. I'm pretty sure I can get her to hold out until fall. But not much longer than that. As you know, we've been paying off student loans, and we pay off another one next month. Woohoo! Second to last one. It's exciting. And then we have the big one. $26,000 big one. That one's going to hurt. Anyways, the point being, I haven't really been saving money. I've been spending it on student loans.
Yeah.
And so I've been doing the math. I'm like, huh. I'll have to start saving here in a couple months. Otherwise, this is going to hurt fast.
Right.
And so, I mean, thankfully, it's not going to be too hard. But, you know, it's that recognition of, you know, this actually is going to cost me, like, a lot of money. This is not, you know, because I buy two, right?
Right. And I have an iPhone 5 to sell, which is worth something as opposed to the iPhone 4s.
Yeah. 4S's. Yeah, that's the other thing, which I think I've finally been convinced to get under the 2-year cycle anyways, for that very reason, because in that last year you lose so much value that you actually just would have been better off to buy a new one. You know, there actually is genuinely like a $100 difference between mine and yours. And so they're like, so you it would have been worth it for me to... Yeah. You know what I mean? Does that make sense what I'm saying?
Yes.
Okay, good. So I'm saying what you're doing is smart. What I did, probably not the smartest, but, you know, whatever. The point being, we're going to get new phones, and so I saw that extra $100 as well and went, man, last time we spent $300 each plus... some other fees and stuff, and so, you know, by the time it was all said and done, I can't remember if we got Apple Care Plus or not. We probably did, and I forget even how much that is. But I mean, it was probably around, you know, $700-$800 when it was all said and done, right?
Yeah.
For a couple of phones, which we've owned for like,
right?
What?
That was on contract, right?
That was on contract, right? Because we got the 32 gig one, so you got, you know, so 200 plus another 100. And then, some other stuff. And which they lasted for 3 years. So you're like, for a device that I use multiple times every single day, that's not horrible. And so, you know, so I'm okay with that. But the reality is, okay, that was around $800. If we're going to tack on two more, we're talking about $1,000 here investing into, again, devices that I use. Will use every single day in multiple different ways, and it's a part of my life, so I get it. But still, that's expensive. And I will admit that I suddenly find myself going, so, what are some other ways that I can do photo storage to not have to use iPhoto? What are some other ways that I can stream my music and watch videos? Can I watch an iTunes video on an Android device if I want to stream it. Is that, can I do that? Is that allowed? You know what I mean? I find myself asking those types of questions because I'm like, man, $1,000, that's not cheap. Plus, that's subsidized if I want to stay with AT&T, which I'm not crazy about.
Right. See, that's my biggest problem is I want, you know, my big move here right now and what I'm doing with my phone stuff is I think it's wise to get off of the contracts and getting off of these long-term agreements. And if I plan ahead and sell my phone, I can buy a phone contract free. And out the door, it's going to cost me a cheek, which is horrifying. It's like, I can't believe I spent that much money on my computer. I actually spent a lot more than that when I think about it.
By the way, did you see that Verizon announced that they're going to start giving discounts to subscribers who have paid off their phone?
I'm glad to hear
it. No. It's people who are... No, they're going to give discounts to people who are not on contract. So, which is the equivalent, in my opinion, of them saying, well, you paid off your phone, so we'll give you that discount back. I really hope AT&T does that. If they do that, they'll keep me. AT&T, listen to what I just said.
Yeah, that's important. So one of the interesting questions here that I'm learning more about is the idea of a Velbin good. Have you ever are you familiar with this as you studied economics in undergraduate
college? No.
Then I will read you what an Velbin good. It's based on. It's an idea brought to us by the economist Velbin, named after him. Wikipedia. In economics, a Velbin good is a member of a group of commodities whose demand is proportional to their price. An apparent contradiction of the law of demand. A Velbin good is often also a proportional good. Positional good. The Velbin effect is named after economist Thorstein Velbin, who first identified the concept of conspicuous consumption and status seeking in 1899. Basically, what he's saying is when you pay for a brand name stuff, sometimes what you're paying for is just the brand name. There's not an actual increase in quality. You're just paying for a brand that allows you to literally say, you know, I paid a lot of money for this. So it's all the girls walking around with a Louis Vuitton and, you know, purses and the dudes that are walking around with their, like, $2,000 suits that don't fit any better or look any nicer than anything else. I just figured out the name for one of our peanut butters because we're going to come up with a Velbin peanut butter where it's literally we want to charge $400 for a bottle of jar
of peanut butter. Ben and Jerry's model. I gotcha.
Exactly.
There's a cool story in Psychology of Persuasion, which is a fantastic book, probably my favorite business book of all time because it's actually a psychology book. And let's be honest, business is psychology. And at least the marketing side of things is, which I am. And he tells a story about a person who had some beads and they were saying like they were on a on a front counter or something like that, and they were not selling well at all, and it was something like the beads were for a bag of them was like $10 or something, and he he was like, dude, we've got to get rid of these things. And so he told the sales clerk person, dude, just dump them, like slash a zero off of it essentially, and let's just get rid of them. And and so he came back the next day, and the beads were completely sold out. He was like, yes, finally! And then started ringing it up and went, whoa, wait a second, what happened here? Yeah, it turns out the sale clerk misunderstood and added a zero instead.
What?
But what happened is people were like, oh, these must be really good beads. Look at, they're $100. Yeah, I want these. Sold out. And that was the, part of it is, people are trying to determine what's valuable and what's not, and it's hard. Like you're talking about, if you're just looking at a suit, you're like, I don't know anything about suits, if it's valuable or not. But you know that there's a difference between $200 and $2,000. So you're trying, we as humans are trying to seek a way to ground ourselves and to compare for what's good or what's not. And so price is one of the ways that we do it. We go, man, if this is more expensive, this person who's selling it is, we assume, is a rational person and sets the price appropriately. And we go, this suit must be 10 times better. And you know, just like these beads, oh, they must be 10 times better than normal beads. These ones are good bean stocks. No, wait, those are beans, not beads. I got myself there. You know what I mean? And so that's part of the way that works. And so
there was a time and day that you could walk into Starbucks and get a coffee, a fancy coffee, and a slice of, you know, sweet bread for less than $3, and it didn't sell very well. So they quadrupled that, and now it sells like crazy. Same stuff. I mean, that's the classic. They're pretty open about the fact that their baked goods sold terribly until they doubled the price, and then all of a sudden people started buying it because, like you said, there's a perceived value. Suddenly it was more expensive than McDonald's, even though it was just a scone, and which I hope,
and not a very good scone either.
Yeah, seriously. A lot of Starbucks value is in the fact that it's expensive and that it's funny. I've long believed in, like, you know, going to the cheapest gas station that, you know, on the corner. You know, go to where the gas is the cheapest. Why the heck would you go to 76? And I heard somebody make the argument that they're like, basically, what you're going to do is I'm going to get to, by paying a couple cents extra to go to 76, not only do I theoretically get better gas, which who knows if Techron's doing much for my car anyways, but the bathrooms are clean, there's fewer people in line, and I pay an extra 50 cents for a tank, and I was like, whoa, that's actually... I do hate the bathrooms at Arco, and I do hate waiting in line at Rotten Robbie's. That might be worth 50 cents to me to go across the street, 5 cents extra a gallon on a 10-gallon tank.
Here's what I know. Here's all I know. Arco is owned by Exxon, who also owns Chevron, by the way.
Yeah.
They are the same company. Now, does Chevron add Techron to it, you know, really, and that's why they're different, whereas Arco is just pure from the pump or the ditch or the drill, whatever, you know, is that the difference? I don't know, but they're the same company.
Right.
The money goes to the same people.
Right. And I think ultimately, I think that the obvious conclusion here is that, you know, that the more expensive gas is a bit of a velvet good. I get Chevron because it's, you know, I get Shell, I get whatever because it makes me look cooler, which is fine. I mean, you're allowed to do that.
Right.
It's a rational thing to do. But the question, though, so, I mean, this is cool economic theory, but the question is the iPhone, and I've heard, as people are like, I think the iPhone's going up $100. I'm bought into that. I'm emotionally prepared for it.
Yeah.
The question is,
or at least
is
one version of it has. Well.
Yeah. Yeah. The question is it going up $100 because they actually think that it's better for profits than doing what everybody else thought they should do, which was make a cheap iPhone, make the iPhone more expensive? Will that drive sales even higher? More people will buy them because they're more expensive? Because it's a luxury good? I keep arguing that I think that they're going to make an $800 iWatch. I think it's going to be stupid expensive. And it's because I think it's a velvet good. I now have a name for it, so I'm going to be using it every podcast for the next 6 months. I just want to prepare all of our listeners for that. I know it's annoying, but this is how I work new words into my vocabulary.
Yeah. Man, I just don't know. I know they're going to do it. Now it's just a question of, is that the rationale behind them doing it? I'm sure it plays a role. It probably is also genuinely more expensive to produce.
Yeah.
And so, you know, that plays a role. And if Samsung's got a bigger phone and it's the same price as them, you know, they're like, no, that's not cool. That is a way that they do distinguish, you know, they separate themselves. And we know that they do with the memory. It doesn't cost them $100 to add more gigs, but they do it anyways.
And I bring up the fact that I have a 64-gig iPhone an obnoxious number of times. I mean, it's... If you hang out with me for a couple of days, you'll know that I have a 64-gig iPhone. I'll find a way to work it in the conversation. I actually legitimately take advantage of it, but, you know, well, I don't get a special color anymore for buying the most expensive iPhone, so I got to make sure everybody knows somehow.
Yeah.
But unlike when it first came out and you got the, you know, you could only get the white iPhone if you bought, you know, if you paid more money, and everybody got the white iPhone. Or then they came out with the gold iPhone for the iPhone 5S, and everybody got the gold iPhone because, you know, gold is best, and you wanted everybody to know that you were the newest, bestest thing. You know, and that's... Why do I wear my Nike or my Nike Fuel Band? I don't. That's Nike's problem. Why do I wear my Fitbit? You know, it's. Sometimes I hate myself, James. When I lay it all out in like in a concise like paragraph like that, I just go, "What? What am I? What have I become?"
Really, man. Really. I don't know. I don't buy Apple products because of that status stuff. I buy it because it works really well, which is why I keep going back and forth between Apple and Android, because, like, man, it's starting to work pretty well over there in the Android camp.
See, and for me, it's like I drive a Honda Civic because it 2002 Honda Civic because it drives great. It gets amazing gas mileage, and I like the car. It's a great car. I'm like, I do not do status stuff just for the sake of status stuff. But if I have something that can improve my status, I enjoy that. I realize
that's fair.
That I
that's
get
fair.
Some, I get some, and so I have a 64 gig iPhone because I use. I've got 50 gigs filled with different content that I regularly use, videos and pictures and all sorts of crazy stuff. I like that. I like being able to do it. I thought it was worth the money. You know, compare that. I got a 16 gig iPad mini. My boss said, we can get you the bigger one. And I said, no, don't worry about it. I don't think I need it. It's not worth the money. And I was wrong. Probably should have gotten 32. Probably should have gotten 64. But, you know, but it's, you know, I don't necessarily just spend money to for status.
Okay, fair enough, fair enough.
And
but if you got it, you flaunt it.
Yeah, and you know, it's kind of nice, and it's you know, I'm not thrilled about paying an extra $100, but for the iPhone, but it's, you know, but now I'm gonna be obnoxious, and I'm gonna let people know that yeah, I bought this off contract, and I'm gonna bring it up as a I'm part of the coming revolution. I'm one of the early adopters of the contractless model. I think it's where we're going, and it's inevitable. And so I'm just getting there because I want to ride that wave. I want to be, you know, I want to be out there first. And I just have to save all of my money, and look how much money I spend. Like, look how wealthy I am. Like, I'll get there eventually. I'll act like it's not just me being, you know, mm-hmm. bragging. Which is funny because it's a stupidly small amount of money compared to people that actually buy Velbin goods. Veblen goods, not Velbin. Veblen goods. You know, guys that actually buy super luxury cars because they're expensive. You know, but then again, the guys that drive Porsches sit there and say, "No, man, it's actually a better car. It's worth the extra money." So I don't know. That's the difficult part of it. That's the different difficult part for me is that the psychology of it is pretty sound. Most of the time people dupe themselves into thinking they're buying something better, not just something for status. And you know, there's certain products. It's like I personally believe that, you know, I know more about purses than I should. I think that Coach purses are tend to be more worth their money than any other purse, where they are one of the highest quality purses that you can buy for not incredibly stupid money. Now, could you buy a perfectly fine purse for $40? Yes. But could you buy, is it a very nice purse? Is it really good build quality? Does it have really good materials? Is it kind of worth the couple hundred dollars that you might spend on a purse? Yes. Is a Louis Vuitton purse worth it? No. That one's definitely into the ballpark of we're better than Coach, you know? And I have to ask the question, have I duped myself into thinking that Coach is fine? That Coach, you know, spending, when somebody sits there and goes, yeah, a Coach purse will last three times as long as a $40 purse, but I can buy four $40 purses for the same amount of money that I bought that Coach purse. So really and truly, my money went further, you know, and you're like, yeah, but did your enjoyment? Yeah, I don't know. It's a complicated question. It's a, and it's, I wonder how much that plays on. I wonder if Apple's quantified it, because I'm sure it happens. It's part of their discussion. I wonder if they've actually sat down and run numbers on it as a company that perceives themselves as a luxury good. You know, think about who they bought to run their stores. Somebody who runs luxury goods stores. You know, I don't know. It would be interesting to get into the inner workings of their company and see how they like, or do they just kind of run by the seat of their pants? How much do you think we could charge for this? I don't know. $900?
Yeah, I don't know. It's a combination of the two.
Yeah. So, let's talk about yours, the other one.
So, Facebook CEO Mark Zuckerberg was interviewed this week, kind of on the basic premise of, is Facebook still innovating? Which are like, yeah, have you not been paying attention to the products they've been coming out with? Yes, lots of them have flopped, but that's part of the innovation cycle, so
yeah.
Yeah. So Facebook has inside of their company something called Creative Labs. Have you downloaded their paper app for iPhone?
I've downloaded every Facebook app.
Okay.
Yes, I have.
So that's the one I actually use 99% of the time now. I really,
really?
Like it. Yep.
I still use the Big Blue app.
Okay.
For reading statuses and stuff. I've used paper and I like it, but you know what I did? And I got to change this up. The Big Blue app, which is what he called it, which is why I'm using that term, is on my social folder. It is the number one, you know, it's the first app. It's the top right corner.
Yeah.
Instagram is right in the center, which is actually the one I tap on most. I don't know why Path is even on there. I haven't opened up Path it's funny. So my social page, the three of the apps are, or yeah, four of them are Facebook app. Facebook, Messenger, Instagram, Poke, which why Poke is on there, I still don't understand. But I should move pages over, because Page is in like the second page deep, so I actually got to flip over to it, which is where all my like stupid Tinder and Hinge type apps are, which are dumb. And I never tap on it because it's not.
Here's what I would do, just an experiment.
Located.
Just do it for a week.
Okay.
Flip flop. Big Blue with paper.
Okay. All right. I'm doing it right now.
Just try it. Because it gives you status updates. And that came out of Creative Labs. And according to Zuckerberg, it's been doing really well.
I met one of the guy's younger brothers who built it.
Cool.
He's part of my fraternity. Yeah.
Oh, there you go. Yeah, and actually, I like it. And according to Zuckerberg, he goes, most people who download it use that full time. So
yeah,
you're actually in the minority. And I went, wow, okay. I'm normal. And he's like, because it's just a better, it's a new, different design. It actually works really well. I like the sound effects too. It's fun. You'll have to, when we're not on the podcast, turn your sound up, and it's actually fun to use just because of the sounds, which is a part of the apps that we often forget because we often keep them on silent, and they're actually some good ones. They talk about some of the big failures that he had, like Home and Graph Search, and Zuckerberg was like, well, Graph Search is still really young. I don't think we can call that a failure yet, and it works, and we just keep adding to it, so back off. And then
chill out.
Yeah, and then he goes, and Home, he goes, okay, yes, I will admit that one didn't go as well as we wanted it to. Fine. Yeah, and so he was just like, we're figuring it out, I guess. So there was that. And then they talked a little bit about WhatsApp and like why that was such a big purchase, and then Facebook Messenger. You know, they're like, do you see those as like, you had Facebook Messenger, you ended up buying WhatsApp, what happened there? You know, and he's like, they're fundamentally two different things. Messenger is really an IM, whereas WhatsApp is SMS. And he's like, and they're genuinely different, and they're used in different ways. And so we're trying to be there for both of them. And then he also made this distinction, which I thought was interesting, where he says there are businesses, young businesses, and then experiments. And so he was like, the Facebook web page, he goes, that's a business. You know, we make a lot of money off of it. He goes, the young ones that will probably turn into businesses are Instagram, WhatsApp, Messenger, and search, in a sense that they will generate their own revenue eventually someday. And then he's like, right. And then there are, you know, experiments coming out of Creative Labs, which is like Home and Paper are a couple of those. And he just talked about how there's different waves where he's like, you know, Instagram and Messenger, he's like, those are probably 3 to 5 years out before actually making any money. And then, like, Home and Paper are like 3 to 5 years out before they reach the stage of Instagram and Messenger. It's like, so there's this long pipeline that they're working through, which you know, which I thought was an interesting and cool way, and, you know, kind of smart way to think about your company and how it's all working. And then he did talk about how you know, Instagram and WhatsApp, they're not Facebook branded things, and so he was talking about the future of, you know, where's that going with that. And that's where he says, well, when we first got started, we did have Big Blue, and we just put everything into it. And as we've learned more about mobile and where that's going, and if you remember, it was in like an HTML app, too. It was horrible. Yeah. And so they learned and said, okay, it has to be genuinely native. And so they did that. And now they're watching the way people are using them, and they're like, they want single use and fast. It's like, and so you're watching us start to pull those parts out, where Messenger was the first kind of the big one. They did pull out the Photos app, if you remember that one, and then decided they couldn't do it that well, and so they bought Instagram, and which I'm still kind of like...
A day and a half later.
Yeah, that's not a total replacement, but okay. You know, so there's that piece of it. And where was I going with this? And so he's like, so you're going to watch us continue to unbundle that, and which is very similar to what Google's been doing. It's kind of weird. Like, Google's a smart company. I know. But even, like, they figured that out a lot faster than Facebook did, you know?
Well,
and there's just certain things where Google's, like, they're just half a step ahead of everybody. It's cool.
I don't mean to tap, you know, pat ourselves on the back too hard, because I sometimes will dislocate my shoulder if I pat too hard. but we give our own titles, right? And the title I gave this that article was Facebook Takes Our Advice. It's Breaking Apart the Big Blue App, which is something we've been talking about on the show for a while. But you're right. I mean, but Google's been doing that the whole time. I wonder if that's sort of the structure of just sort of how the two companies evolved, where Google was so much about letting all these little small groups be independent and autonomous. You know, how long did it take them to force the Android team to bundle Chrome, the Chrome browser, into Android? You know, where they finally said, look, get on the Chrome bandwagon, you know, and it's like within their own company. I wonder if it was one of those accidental innovations where it just so happened to work. And whereas Facebook, you know, everything had been about bring people to Facebook.com, never let them leave. It was all about resonance time on Facebook.com. But, you know, we've been talking about the whole dilemma of the Levi's and the, you know, the leave of well, what's it called? The Dockers dilemma, right? They go out and they make their own, you know, their client. The story 100 times, but for those of you who don't know, Dockers, Levi decided they wanted to make some nice khaki work pants. They make these great pants. Nobody buys them because they're Levi's, and Levi's are jeans. So they go back to the drawing board. They come up with this brand called Dockers. It's the exact same pants brand, the exact same company, but it's not Levi's branded. They sell like crazy, and they're best-selling khaki pants in the world, or in America, or whatever. You know, and why? Because it was a branding issue, and it was about breaking the company into different parts so that they all kind of do their own thing. And, you know, we've been talking about this for a while. Get these different brands going, get these different things, break it apart from the Facebook giant heap, And then, you know, and whereas Google's had the problem, they've had to go the other direction. They wanted to collate all that data and bring everything together. And that's made a lot of people upset as you have to sign into Google Plus in order to get a YouTube account. You know, Facebook's kind of gone the other direction where they've started everything together and now they're breaking everything apart. And, you know, and they're both sort of homogenizing in the same place. Of what does that structure look like? I'm glad to see it because, like Zuck said, finally you listened to me. You know, I wanted super fast, responsive, single-use apps. I don't want everything in one. You know, the UI trying to navigate the Big Blue app was just too much. It's way too much. And you know, I want a folder. I want what I have with Google, which is I have a folder with all of my Google apps in it. I want a Facebook folder, not one app that was my, you know, that was everything that Facebook does. And then, you know, throw it in with the rest of my social stuff. But I don't know. It's cool. I'm glad to hear it. I'm not going to go too much into this article, but I thought it was super interesting. It was titled The Rise and Fall of AIM. And it basically asked the question of how, you know, for those of you, you know, who are old enough to remember using America's Online's instant messaging platform. And basically, it was a company that they came up with this product, this really cool. They came up with tons and tons of innovations, and it's a great history of it. How did the technology develop? What problems were they trying to solve? And it basically gave birth to the instant messaging client and, by and large, text messaging in general. And kind of where we're at. A lot of the innovations that they came up with and the problems that they were seeing are now just de facto standards in a lot of these apps applications in general, these platforms. And it's a fascinating read. I highly recommend it. But one of the things that I thought was really interesting is basically the reason why AOL collapsed is the same reason. One of the symptoms was AIM. And it's basically, this is a company that said, look, this is a really cool product. It makes sense if everybody has it for free. And AOL said, but how are we going to make money on it? And they said, you won't. Like, we should buy a service. And it's funny. The engineers basically had to, like, secretly go about what they were doing and launch these products and oftentimes got into these huge arguments with the bosses and the executives at AOL and sort of like had these crazy development things going on. they were getting it out there because they thought it was super important to the survival of AOL to have this new product that they were developing being in the hands of everybody. They wanted everybody to have an AIM username, and AOL refused to ever get on board with that and that idea that they would have this and it would be free and it would be part of their evolution of the company. And they just never got on board, and because they never got on board, they were overtaken by other companies that basically did the same thing but better and for free. It's an interesting context to look at what Facebook is going through right now, especially with their whole thing that with what he described as there's businesses, there's new, you know, young businesses, and there's, you know, what was the last category? Experiments.
Yeah.
And AIM was an experiment that was quickly turning into a new business that they messed up. And once again, you know, talking about the long-term survival of Facebook, you know, I think the fact that they've got that attitude and they're willing to try these things out for free and give them the space and say, I don't know how we're going to make money off of it, we're going to try it anyways, is important. I guess, how much time I got? One more?
Very little.
Probably?
What?
Okay.
Okay.
Then I'm just going to... Project Tango is doing cool things, but we're not going to talk about it. They're using Apple technology. Haha. Because Apple bought the company that they're using it to buy it. But what I want to talk about is... this is a rumor show. We're all about rumors right now. But it seems pretty slam dunk. Amazon's going to come out with a phone later this year. And it's going to be glasses-free 3D. Oh, baby. Which
Bring it.
As somebody who really likes 3D technology, because I'm a dork, I'm very excited about this. I don't know what it's going to be or what it's going to look like. It's going to have some sort of facial head tracking, is what it sounds like. But so it's going to be able to like I'm not sure if it's one of those where you'll be able to move the phone and the background will, you know, and the images will adjust appropriately, or if it's going to be the three full-blown stereoopic 3D like you have with the 3DS from Nintendo. But it seems to be coming, which is pretty cool. So, very excited. Very excited.
Cool. We'll have to wait and see. Wait and see. All right, man. Good show. A lot going on. Starting off with Nest and what they're going to be doing. Loom, Dropbox. Maybe what Apple will be doing with or without Nike.
Yeah.
Facebook's future. Little AOL and Amazon to finish it up. Good show, man. Good show. Well, everybody, my name is James Furlow. My brother, let's see, you are, I can't remember.
Excellent.
My excellent brother, there you go.
Which I want you all to know that that hurts us as much as it hurts you.
I love it. So he is Matthew Furlow. So everybody, thank you for joining us, and we will talk next time.